Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Roll in.
Freedom.
Fiends. Freedom of fiends.
Fiends.
Worms. So, what's up, brother man?
Chilling. Had a long day at work. Ate some dinner. Now I'm ready to podcast.
Cool. Yesterday was a really good day, man. There was a earthquake in D.C. and we found out that our movie is going to get released in December instead of having to wait until March.
Yeah. Michael called me. It was around noon. And he was like, yeah, we got the distribution. I was like, oh, awesome. And there was an earthquake in D.C.
I know. And nobody was hurt, you know, nobody died in the earthquake, so we can be grateful.
Yeah, if somebody died, I probably would not be happy. Although, didn't the Washington Monument crack?
Yeah, but, you know, it's cracked in theory about 100 years ago, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't really look into the story. I just read something about how, first, I think people thought it was leaning, and then I read a follow-up that part of it had cracked. So it had been cracked previously, you think?
No, I mean, the underlying principles were cracked.
Right, it's just now catching up
at least
to
100
the
years
reality.
Ago, you know, it's kind of like them complaining that the U.S. that our AAA rating was downgraded. It was downgraded like 4 years ago in action, you know.
Right. Well, it didn't even need to be downgraded. It's been downgraded way before that.
I know.
I don't see how your AAA, once you become a full fiat currency like we did when Nixon closed the gold window.
I heard today that 44% of young black men are unemployed right now, and I just want to say, way to go, Obama.
I did read that. And yeah, in fact, you know, lots of black leaders, you know, are sort of calling attention to that fact that blacks are having it pretty hard under the first black president. And as we pointed out the irony earlier, he's also bombing Africa.
They're doing the AK dance in Libya now.
Right. The so-called rebels,
yeah,
who are just another faction that we supported in a,
they're just deputized,
in a civil war.
They're just deputized CIA officers.
Pretty much. And now they're, of course, saying they're going to reconfigure all the oil contracts. So China, Brazil, India. Oh, I don't know about India, but China and Brazil. Sorry, no more contract.
I think Halliburton should write the new constitution for Libya.
They probably already got it written. They probably got one written for every country with oil in it already, just ready to go.
I know.
Once the spooks pull the trigger and get the whole situation over with.
I heard that somebody said God is angry, and that's why there was an earthquake in D.C.
I think you said it on your Facebook.
I said it as a joke, but then you said you heard it on Rush Limbaugh, didn't you?
I did hear it on Rush Limbaugh.
Which you were listening to for, you don't like Rush Limbaugh.
Research.
Yeah, research. Yeah, I only read Playboy for the articles.
I had to drive all the way to Walla Walla from the Tri-Cities, which is about an hour drive for a story. And usually on my long drives, I'll put it on the whatever the talk radio station is. So I end up here in Hannity, Limbaugh, whatever. Although I've actually started downloading Free Talk Live podcasts and listening to those instead.
And we got a shout out to Ian because he's in jail right now.
Shout out to Ian, poor little liquor on the ground for our homie in jail.
What's he in jail for? Tell the people.
From what I understand, I guess he did a little civil disobedience and obstructed a police officer who was trying to arrest a woman that he felt was being arrested unjustly. This happened like a year ago. You know, this speedy trial notion is just nonsense. I cover courts and crime for our news station here, and it takes at least a year for anything to happen in the court system. So a year later, he's doing his 90-day sentence. Forget what the charge is, but it might be obstruction of justice.
Obstruction of hats.
So obstruction of hats.
Well, he got arrested before for not removing his hat in court, didn't he?
I don't know if that was him. I've heard that from some Free State New Hampshire guys have done that before, but I don't know if that was them. And what did they do? They said they were in contempt of court because they didn't remove their hat.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that was Ian specific.
They were not men without hats. Do you know who Men Without Hats are?
Did they do the safety dance?
Yeah, you know, somebody was really appalled that you didn't know who that what that song was, but you know.
Really? No, I knew what the song was. It's the
You didn't know what it's called.
We can dance if we want to.
Yeah. No one knows what it's called.
I did. It's called Safety Dance, isn't it?
No, you thought that was boning with a rubber.
No, I thought that that's what the song was about.
Well, you know, old farts can't get upset when the youngsters don't know the complete history of everything because they don't know the music you listen to.
That's true. That's
you know,
true.
They wouldn't know Run DMC from, who do you listen to?
Lupe Fiasco is probably my favorite.
They would,
they wouldn't
know Lupe Fiasco Lupe from, or Kanye. From the Fat Boys.
Right, right.
You know who the Fat Boys are, right?
Yeah, yeah. I probably know them from seeing them on a movie rerun on some
There's a takeoff on them in CB4. But there's actually in the Boondocks, there's something where Grandpa says, "Don't be running around doing something like the Fat Boys." And one of the kids is like, "Who's the Fat Boys, Grandpa?"
Yeah, Boondocks is a quality show. They're coming out with the fourth season, aren't they?
I don't know, but I would like that. There's a lot of good stuff coming out right now. You know what we did not talk about? Was Breaking Bad and the Ron Paul reference in it.
Now, is that in one of the... Because they're playing season 4 right now, aren't
they? Yeah, have you been... Oh, you don't have it on Hulu yet, huh?
I don't have TV, really. So I have the first three seasons recorded. So I watched those, but I don't have...
Okay, well,
been able to watch
the end of season 3, you know, Gail, the lab assistant, genius, the libertarian guy...
Right, the guy that said he's cooking meth because he says he's a scientist and he basically says, "I'm a libertarian. I believe consenting adults should be able to buy whatever they want."
And Jesse shoots him, although you're not really sure in the last scene of the last season whether he shoots him or turns the gun past him and shoots past him.
Well, I guess you just ruined it for me.
Okay, well, it's common knowledge. Spoiler alert. He kills him. Okay. Jesse kills Gail. And another cop brings Hank a copy of the lab notebook that they found in Gail's apartment. It's like obviously notes for a meth super lab. And then it's got all this other weird stuff in it, like Walt Whitman poems and a list of the top 10 recombinant bicycles. And
wait, what's a recombinant bicycle?
The ones that you lean back on. They're more energy efficient.
Oh, yeah. And I had no idea what those are called, but everybody in Austin drives them.
Recumbent? What is it, DJ?
Recumbent. Okay.
Recumbent. Top 10 recumbent bicycles.
The ones where people are like laid back,
yeah,
chilling.
Yeah. And then he's got a list of indoor home composting tips. And Hank shows this notebook to Walt, like to try to get advice on how to catch this guy, you know?
Wow.
Or how to, you know, find out where his lab was. And Walt's flipping through it, and there's a Ron Paul sticker stuck in the book.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
And, you know, I was talking with some people on Facebook about that, and there were some Ron Paul supporters who were like, "Oh, I think that's just trying to discredit Ron Paul." And I'm like, "No, it's not. That guy would have a Ron Paul sticker." I mean, I just looked at it from a filmmaking and prop master kind of standpoint. Like, that is what he would have in his notebook.
Yeah, that's the obvious choice, I think, from a director. I don't think it was politically motivated, unless you could argue that maybe introducing a libertarian as a meth cooker was originally
right. Well, you know, no, I think when Fox News says, "Ron Paul, why do you want to legalize heroin?" they're trying to back him into a corner. I think when a pretty libertarian show has a libertarian character who happens to be a meth cook who has a Ron Paul sticker, it's just a smart prop, you know?
Right. And Fox News has been trying to back Ron Paul into corners lately. They granted him this one interview I was watching, and it was sort of, you know, a makeup interview, you know, after the Jon Stewart took all the media to task for ignoring him after winning the straw poll. And the lady, her final round of questioning was about some ad that a guy put in the Austin Chronicle asking for anybody who had had sex with Rick Perry to come forward and tell their story. I think the ad, its big letters said, "Have you had sex with Rick Perry? Are you a hot stripper or a gay guy?" Something like that. I actually know the guy who took out the ad. In 2008, I went to work the phones for Ron Paul's campaign, and this guy was one of the volunteers there, and he kind of struck me as a little bit of a weird guy, and he's my Facebook friend now, and he's always posting things about Rick Perry having sex with different people. But the ad didn't mention mention Ron Paul's name at all. You know, I guess some reporter found out that this guy was a Ron Paul supporter. And they bring it up on the interview like that's some big thing. Like Ron Paul had something to do with it. Like he told this weird guy in Austin to run an ad in the Austin Chronicle, which I don't know if you know what the Austin Chronicle is, but it's one of those alternative like news things.
Like a weekly, where they have, you know, a weekly free paper?
No, it's I don't know what the weekly free paper is.
Weekly free paper is something that's in almost every major city and it's owned by the same company and they're totally lefty. Like the Houston Weekly is one of them.
Yes, it's exactly like, yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is. That's what the Austin Chronicle is. You know, it has the concert scene. It has all the local stuff. You know, people who are hipsters read it. It's in Thundercloud Subs.
Yeah, it tells you where the cool bands are playing and when the free healthcare is going to get put through.
Yeah. So anyway, it was just Ron Paul, you know, played it really well. He said, you know, I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. What people who claim to be my supporters do, I mean, that doesn't mean they're tied to me.
Well, we've said that before. You know, the Unabomber was into Al Gore. So there you go.
But I do think it's worthy of a freedom fix how Ron Paul is doing so well still, I think. There was a poll today where he's third nationally, and I mean, the polls change every day, but he basically leapfrogged Michelle Bachmann, and this might change by, you know, when the podcast actually hits the air, but it was just really nice to see him there in the top three in a major Rasmussen poll, and, you know, I think he's kind of hot right now.
He's always been hot to me. You know, an interesting thing was that you never brought up to me how I tried to draft you for Ron Paul's congressional seat last week.
Oh, right.
Like, yeah, I sent these emails, I CC'd you on them, I sent you a text, and you never mentioned, it never came up. Basically, you know, you were talking about moving back to Texas someday soon, and I was thinking, well, I don't know how long you have to live there to run for office, but you did live there before, and you were a registered Republican to be in the Ron Paul campaign. And I was thinking, you know, he's given up his congressional seat. Why not have Nima run? So I wrote to my friend Dave Nail, who's the president of the Republican Liberty Caucus, of which I am the, I guess I'm still the Wyoming representative, but I don't really.
Are you really? I thought.
I tried to quit, but it didn't take.
Dave, that guy never stepped up and took your place.
Well, someone did. And then
you're talking to some young guy.
Yeah, he did it and became an anarchist. And then they asked me to fill in for a while, and I did, and then I became pretty much apolitical.
Right.
And
right. Everybody who's held that president of Republican Liberty Caucus in Wyoming has ended up becoming an anarchist.
Except one who started his own party, the county party. But yeah, so I guess I'm still on the website as, you know, and they pimped our movie and had a showing of it down there. So, you know, we're on good terms. So I called, I emailed him. I was like, hey, I know this young, hip, ethnic Texas Republican who looks good in a suit and has a pretty wife. What else does it take to run for office for Texas? He basically said that there were too many Liberty candidates who were already known there who were going to step up and do it, but that you should run for something else. So, but I know you hate politics, but I thought you might make an exception to be a member of the U.S. Congress in Ron Paul's seat.
That did cross my mind, and, you know, I sort of went through this debate in my mind, and I don't really want to get involved in politics. I don't really want to run a campaign. If it was a sure thing, or I had a lot of support, or, you know, there are people telling, a bunch of people telling me to, I might reconsider.
Yeah.
The other thing is, we weren't really planning on moving back to where I would live in Ron Paul's district.
Yeah, but you could live like 3 miles away and live in Ron Paul's district. It kind of gerrymanders around just outside of Houston.
And they did redistrict it, so I don't even know what the map is now, because
I think Alvin is in his district.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't be moving back to Houston. That wasn't really our plan. We were kind of aiming for more of the Austin area. I'd still love to get in touch with, I think Dave, he's from Austin, isn't he?
Dave Nail?
He works out of Austin.
Yeah, I think he's in Austin.
I'll still get in touch with them. I'll work with them. I'll do things. And if once we get to know each other, maybe one day.
So are you moving to Texas?
I'm not 100% at liberty to say that, but eventually, on a long enough timeline, of course, I'm going to be back in Texas.
Well, on a long enough timeline, everyone dies, but, you know.
Well, fine. On a slightly shorter timeline, I'll be back in Texas. It's not my intention to stay in Washington State. I mean, we've talked before about how it's, what, 40th on the list of freest states?
Yeah. But if you ran for office, you know, they would dig deep into the dirt and they'd find something. I mean, they'd find out that you don't scoop your poop on public property because it's yours.
I wonder if, I mean, somebody would bring up the movie, you know.
Oh, I'd hope they would. I mean, I would think you'd have
either a Republican or a Democrat, a mainstream.
What do you mean bring up Republican the movie? You'd have Democrat fundraisers where you'd show the movie and serve spaghetti dinner.
I would. I mean, I'm not hide. I would never hide from the movie ever.
I don't think you'd be able to.
I'd be proud of it.
I don't think you'd be able to once it comes out. Now let's go back to talking about the movies coming out, man.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah, how do we... That passed over our heads, too. Go ahead and explain the situation first, because we've been talking about the movie, people have seen it, and so it might be weird for people to hear, I thought the movie was already out, you know?
We finished the movie a while back, like many months ago. Basically, we made it in like 4 or 5 months, and finished like the end of last year. Our distributor, MVD, wanted to do this thing where they'd put out a really expensive cut only for colleges and video stores, like $120. Then a year later,
which was also edited. There was
it was shorter with no cussing and not much hip hop. Yeah, because you know college students hate hip hop. But so the plan was to that was last March, and then the plan was next March to release the full director's cut and put it up on digital, you know, Hulu, Netflix, iTunes, etc. And it kind of leaked out and got bootlegged somehow. And got put a few different places on the internet. So I went to our distributor and said, look, it's kind of leaking out. We're losing money if we don't just put it out. And people will still buy, you know, it's going to come out at $14.99 for the DVD. And it's going to be on Netflix and Hulu and iTunes. My experience with my other movies is that people will still buy something on DVD if it's on the internet. You'd think it would work, you know, the major studios say it works the opposite way, but it actually increases sales. It's kind of weird.
I think so. And you know, I've had people come up to me asking to buy it, people I know or people who I barely know or just people who've seen the movie. And you've had the same thing. And
every day.
What am I supposed to tell them? Okay, go buy it for $150.
Yeah, not many people have. But so, you know, it's going to hit like a rusty bomb and hit and be a hit. That's my prediction.
I hope so. And I think the other thing is, I mean, part of the way media works these days is you buy it to support the artist. I mean, that's part of the new media paradigm is building a relationship with fans and then having them support you by buying your DVD or donating or whatever it is. Because really, any media you want that's out there, anybody can get for free now.
Yep.
So that's the new paradigm is if you like an artist and if you want them to keep doing what they're doing, you support them.
With bands, the theory is, you know, you download the music free and then you support them by going to see them live and buying t-shirts.
Yeah.
And we do sell t-shirts, but you know, I guess we could do a play and perform the movie live.
Guns and Weed Live, that would be a show.
Guns and Weed, the musical. So you ever been in an earthquake?
Once when I was really young, I lived in Salt Lake. I was chilling in the basement, laying down, and things rumbled for a bit. I think I remember hearing later that it was like something like a 3 on the Richter scale. Something
that's like
something
a truck going
tiny.
By, man.
Yeah,
because it's exponential. Like, you know, a 5 is 10 times a 4. I was in the San Francisco earthquake in '89, the one that killed people and leveled houses and collapsed part of the Bay Bridge, and it was like,
oh wow. So what happened?
Well, from my house, I knew it was the biggest I'd ever been in, but I was amazed when I learned the amount of damage. It wasn't very bad at my house, and I lived in the city, and like, you know, 4 blocks from me, like the sidewalk buckled permanently, like 5 inches. But that was a 6.9, which is about 10 times the strength of the one that was in DC the other day, the 5.8. Although sometimes the government underreports the magnitudes, so they don't have to pay out FEMA money. Allegedly. They did that allegedly at the LA Northridge quake in 94, which DJ survived.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. Allegedly. Oh man, I found it. I ran across this guy, Brad. He was someone that was in the Philadelphia Independent Film Fest, and he was he made this movie about jumping trains. He was bragging that his movie was financed with FEMA money and food stamps. I was really disgusted by that.
At least he was honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you see that Obama is spending $1.3 million to expand broadband internet to rural U.S., including Wyoming?
I read that as a blurb in our local paper, but I just read the headline. So why don't you go ahead and explain to me the nuts and bolts?
Well, basically, that's the it of it. And I think it's kind of ironic because he's wiring a bunch of red states that say they don't want the government to spend any more money. But I really think it's basically just installing the Big Brother is watching you 1984 telescreens in everyone's home.
Hold on.
These
are going to be free wireless, like...
No, not wireless, broadband. Like,
okay.
I don't know if you know this, but a lot of, some of rural U.S., including a lot of Wyoming, you cannot get DSL.
Right, right. But you can, I think some of the satellite companies have a thing where you can get your internet through your satellite hookup, right?
Yeah, but satellite costs about $100 a month, and it's way slower than DSL and less reliable.
Right.
It's more like it's between DSL and dial-up.
Well, if there's a rainstorm, you don't get your internet.
Right. Yeah. Right. Somebody, this guy Mike Freed Slave Walker said, it does help with state surveillance of the lesser monitored slaves in the hinterlands. The original Waxman cap and trade bill had a provision to create building code enforcement officers for every square inch of the U.S. It also stated that they shall not be limited to building code enforcement.
Wow.
I just picture like some government agent being stationed in everyone's yard, like, you know,
yeah.
I go out and he tells me I'm not filling the bird feeder right or something.
Well,
I'm watering too much.
Paul Krugman would say that's a great idea. It'll create jobs.
Well, that goes back to the broken window theory. Do you want to talk about the broken window theory and what's wrong with it?
The broken window fallacy? I think now is a great time to talk about that. Paul Krugman recently went on the air and said that...
Who is Paul Krugman?
Paul Krugman, he won the Nobel Prize in Economics recently. He's sort of a...
DJ's laughing in the other room.
He's a kept intellectual. He's sort of Obama's justifier as far as economic policies. In fact, he doesn't think Obama has spent enough money on the economy. That's his main critique of the Obama administration. He basically said recently that it would be great if we could say there was a space alien invasion and then all come together and spend all this money on protecting ourselves from the space aliens. And then if we found out 10 years later that there were no space aliens, we would still be all the better for it. And so, of course, that brings up Bastiat's broken window fallacy, which is basically you have to look at the seen and the unseen. And what Paul's ignoring there is the unseen opportunity cost. Those billions of dollars you spent on your space alien defense weaponry could have been spent on productive things that actually add wealth to society instead of consuming it.
The broken window policy is basically saying that if spending government money makes jobs, you'd improve the economy by breaking every window in every building because someone would have to fix them.
Right, exactly. When all that money could have been spent on something other than windows. It could have been spent on food for the poor or whatever the people would have deemed most economically necessary.
Or just not paying as much in taxes.
Right, right. Well, the money should have stayed with the people who chose to spend it. Basically, the most efficient spending of money is done through the free market. The market is
the people, the people, the people, people, the people, the people, people, the people, the people, the people.
And exactly. And one of the good ways I think about it is think about all the money Obama spent on stimulus, you know, throwing all this money out there, building roads, basically busy work. Just think if he would have given all those billions of dollars or just not A, if he would have not taken them, all that money.
Well, most of it didn't even go to infrastructure, you know, and a lot of people agree or use this word infrastructure over and over and over of like, yeah, you need bridges, you need roads, etc. But most of the money didn't go to infrastructure. A lot of it went to things like, you know, studying the sex lives of moths or something.
A lot of it did go to infrastructure, but...
No, it didn't.
Well, I think a lot of it did. I don't think it justifies it. I mean, I don't know what the percentage
is. Don't make me look up statistics because we're not that kind of a podcast.
I know we're not, but I'm saying I'm saying was a bunch that got spent on road projects, things like that. I'm not saying these projects made anything better. And if they did, who's to say that that money should have been spent on that? And that's sort of the broken window fallacy as well. Basically, the broken window fallacy comes from a story where a kid throws a rock through a window at a guy's business. And then a neighbor comes out and says, oh, well, that's okay. That's great. Because now you'll have to write a check to the glassmaker so he can repair the window. And then the glassmaker will go and buy shoes for his kid. And everybody will be happier. And because the shoemaker will then go spend money at the baker and buy bread. And then Bastiat says, well, no, that's nonsense because the guy who's the shop owner, instead of buying the new window, he could have bought the shoes from the guy. And the same process would have happened, but you wouldn't be short a window. That window was a net loss.
And it comes up a lot in bullshit economy, like what our president is doing and what previous presidents have often done. I heard today someone in the Obama administration saying that, yeah, there's more people now on food stamps than ever, but it's a good thing because that stimulates the economy. And I'm like, what?
Well, because they have this fake ass multiplier effect, which is really the opposite. They say that every time the government spends a dollar, it improves the economy by $1.5, or I don't know what their metric is.
Yeah, it was something made up by some government organization.
Right,
government task force made that bull.
But yeah. Really, it's the opposite because, okay, so every dollar that the welfare recipient gets doesn't come straight from the taxpayers. It has to go through all these bureaucrats who get their fat pensions and their nice offices. You know, being a reporter, one thing I notice is the people who have the nicest offices are government bureaucrats.
You know, something that really frustrates me lately is when I'm doing all this outputting for the movie. I mean, I can do it, but it would go a lot faster and things wouldn't crash as often if I had a computer that could take like 4 more gigs of RAM. And I could even afford 4 more gigs of RAM, but I don't have a computer that can take it. And I'm just thinking, like, there are thousands of video editors working in government offices doing, like, even internal stuff that the public never sees just to sell their own dog and pony show to each other.
Yeah.
Who all have, like, the latest, coolest computers for video editing, and I'm paying for it. But because I'm paying for it, I can't afford what I need to make this really earth-shattering art as quickly as I need to or as well, you know?
Exactly. That's the point. Because they're spending other people's money. You will never spend your own money the same way you spend other people's money. And the government never spends their own money. The people writing the budgets, the people spending the money, the more they spend, the more they get. They can come back and say, oh, well, look, we spent $3 billion on this project, so we need at least $3 billion next year because that's how much this project cost. And then the next year, they're like, oh, well, you know, inflation, cost of construction is up, everybody's charging us more, we need another $1 billion. The more they spend, the more they get. And with, you know, an average person with you or me, it doesn't work like that. Prices go up and our incomes generally stay where they are.
So you were going to talk about government press conferences.
Yes. Government press conferences.
And your personal experiences with them.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you know, people always talk about biased media. And yeah, there is bias in the media. But I think more than it being overt or conscious, a lot of it is systemic, the kind of bias you get in media. For instance, government press conferences. I've noticed that government agencies, police departments, prosecutors' offices, they always call a press conference a few hours before the TV deadline.
Intentionally.
They were rarely, I mean, I'm assuming intentionally, but I've rarely, if maybe once in my career, which isn't super long, but maybe once in my career has a politician or a government body called a press conference at 9 or 10. You know, I'm talking about local government here, prosecutor, county prosecutor. They'll call them a few hours before the deadline. They'll give you this report, you know, when you go to the conference. Recently, I went to a press conference. They gave me the report. It was about a guy who had been shot by police. It's a 50-page report. They give you a spiel for 30 minutes. At that point, I've got half an hour to get back to the station and like 15 minutes to put the story together.
Basically, they don't want you to have time to editorialize.
They don't want you to look into it. They don't want you to have time to look through this 50 pages and call them on anything. They just want you to be under so much pressure that I have to just go and pick the strongest thing he said. And he'll say everything that he doesn't really want you to use, you know, kind of slow and pokey, knowing that it won't be ready for a soundbite, and then I'll say the thing that they want you to play, you know, very well and articulate, knowing full well. I mean, I'm assuming here, and you know, I've noticed it with other events. You know, like sometimes law enforcement agencies will put on these sort of SWAT simulations, you know, where you'll pretend the school got taken over by terrorists or whatever, and they'll want to do that. You know, also a few hours before deadline, they'll take on a little tour, give you a few sound bites, and then you don't get to stick around until it's over and see what happened and see if any quote unquote of the fake civilians accidentally got shot, you know, with the little paint guns or whatever. So it's just something that I've noticed in the news business is that systemically, and you know, you could say, oh, well, you're a reporter, you should spend more time digging and digging and digging. Well, I got to put the story on. News, at least TV news, and this is why the internet is going to kick TV's ass in the end. TV news, you got to get the story on first. The timeliness is more important than anything. It's more important than the depth. And so I got to get that on in 15 minutes. I don't have time to read the report. By the time I get it on, nobody else wants the story. I can't pitch it again tomorrow. It's already been done. What am I going to do? I'm going to say, oh, well, yeah. I spent, you know, an hour looking through this. And
I stayed up all night and I've decided that what I reported last night was bullshit. Here's my real take on it. Yeah.
I mean, I know there is definitely bias in the news, and we've talked about that before. And a lot of it is the way reporters are educated in school and the way that reporting basically enforces the status quo. But I think a lot of it, too, is systemic and the way the deadlines work and the way that government agencies release information. TV news is probably not the best place to get the deepest story, which you probably already knew.
Yeah, but we have it from the inside now.
Right.
So I got some some local news here that you'll dig because it's got names that you know from when you were covering the Casper Beat.
Ah.
This is from the, and I can't have you read this because we can't get on without paying anymore on the Tribune, so I had to cut it out. Guns, the Constitution, and the Casper City Council. We touched on this last week about how they're trying to circumvent the state law, the preemption law, meaning you can't have
stricter gun laws on a local level than there are on the state level.
Than the state, mm-hmm. Which is a good thing. You know, like in Colorado, you can open carry, but not in Denver or Boulder. And a lot of states are like that. A lot of towns in a lot of states don't have that preemption. We have it here, which is a good thing. It's also actually a state law here that no federal agent can go door-to-door and randomly disarm people in a time of emergency. They added that after the Katrina fiasco.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. Which, you know, wait how quickly the feds say, Fed Trump state, if that ever comes to it. You know, we have a new word for federal law enforcement agent. It's FLEA, FLEA, yes. And we're actually writing a rap together,
right.
Called FLEAs.
Right, which we love, because, yeah, they're parasites, A, and then it's a nice alphabet acrostic, you know, like all their agencies are, so it's kind of ironic. You know, they're always the FBI, alphabet suit people. Well, for us, they're the FLEAs, so, FLEAs. The FLEAs.
Yeah. Pretty soon we're going to have something on the website where we have an appendix for the strange words we use on Freedom Fiends for the new listener who doesn't want to go back and listen to the first episode and find out that lib pair means libertarian paradise.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. I don't know. The website's getting so busy. I mean, we talked about how people didn't even know it's a podcast, but I did some work on that this week. I moved the player from the bottom to the top of each post and made it colored so it stands out more.
Right.
So anyway, in this article, it's talking about Kit Jennings, who's the state senator who was the original sponsor on the constitutional carry bill, the you can carry without a permit bill here, which did pass. Yay. He said, I understand if you feel threatened because somebody brings a firearm into a meeting. Senator Kit Jennings told the Casper City Council on the issue of carrying guns into city council meetings. I understand your concern on that, but I think what is more important is the adherence to the Constitution. I like that. And then Vice Mayor Kenny, K-E-N-Y-N-E, is that Kanye? Kanye Schlager.
Oh, Kenine Schlager.
Kenine Schlager said, we do have a couple of individuals that come out to our council meetings that it has been a problem in the past in another city in Wyoming. So for me, it is definitely a concern with some of the things that are progressing with these two individuals. Between their weekly letters and their past behaviors, that I definitely, if one of them were to walk into chambers with a weapon, would probably walk out of the meeting crawling below the desk where nobody could see me.
Oh, wow. A little melodrama there. Hakanin, that's funny. That's funny. She would crawl away if she saw somebody. But there's cop right there all the time with his gun. Every city council meeting, there's a cop right there with the gun.
And then council member Paul Meyer, who is serving his first term, also expressed caution. I'm somewhat of a newbie to the game, but I've been followed home twice from the city council meetings. At the turn of July 1st, I fully intended to go down and, for the first time in 20 years, purchase a small weapon and keep it on me, but I just couldn't make myself do it.
You couldn't protect yourself, really? What a puss.
And then this will be your favorite because I know you love Kim Holloway.
Oh, Kim.
Meanwhile, Kit Jennings also ran counter to council member Kim Holloway, who had initially raised the question over the legislature's exemption and challenged Jennings on his resistance to the proposed city ordinance. She said, what about those of us law-abiding citizens who have no interest in owning guns? It's not part of our lives, so why do you all get to raise a ruckus over Second Amendment rights? You know, to walk into the Casper Recreation Center with a gun. I don't get it. And then Kit Jennings replied, Councilwoman, I think you're right. You don't get it.
Way to go, Kit Jennings. You had a great word for what he is. Go ahead and lay that on us.
Oh, a ranchislator.
Ranchislator.
He's not actually a rancher.
No?
Right, DJ?
No. Oh, okay.
That's just kind of my generic term for the state legislators in Wyoming, and it's actually one of the state legislators, I won't say who, made that name up and told us that.
Ah.
Because so many of them are ranchers.
Okay, is it who I think it is?
Of course it is. He's funny. Yeah. So there it is. That's the Casper. Does that bring back memories? You know some of those people personally.
That does bring back memories, yeah. Kim Holloway.
Holloway.
Yes, I remember her when there was supposed to be a new Kohl's department store coming to town, and she was throwing a fit about it and vowing to vote against it, and because she didn't want to see more development, basically. She wanted to develop. She didn't want, you know, it was just a very anti-commerce position. She wanted the development to go by the government plan, exactly how they had planned it out 2 years ago, because those
plans were the best. It's weird because a lot of people like that, progressive liberals, she's a Democrat, right?
I mean, I'm pretty sure our city council is nonpartisan. Like, you don't run as a Democrat or Republican, but yeah, there's no way she's a Republican.
Our city council? You know you want to move back here, Nima.
I wouldn't mind living in Wyoming again. I loved Wyoming.
You just said our city council. DJ's shaking her head yes and smiling.
Maybe one day. I'd love to be back in Wyoming, too.
My wife wants you to move back here.
I'll at least come visit you guys again.
You should.
Yeah, and my wife wants to visit Wyoming again, too.
I've never met your wife. I've talked to her once on the phone.
Oh, that's right.
I always mean to talk to her. I did for months, but every time I talked to you, like, we had so much to talk about. You know, we'd talk about it, and then one of us would get sleepy or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk so much. Yeah, so Kim Holloway. So the funny thing about people like that is they often resist development, but also, like, insult the past before the previous development. You know, that kind of people are the same people. I mean, she's basically saying, I don't like your gun laws that you're proposing because they go back to the Wild West, you know, when the development was a general store and ruts in the street for covered wagons.
Yeah.
But she doesn't want any more development. Maybe she feels that, like, we've reached the pinnacle of development except for these three more laws we need, and then everything will be perfect.
Yeah, right. Well, the thing is, she wanted to go back to this smart development plan, smart growth plan that some bureaucrats had come up with.
Central planning.
Basically central planning. Yeah,
central planning.
They just want to make sure it goes according to their plan, because for a progressive, that's how everything works. You make these government plans, and then somehow nature will become under your control because you've used the violence of the state to force things into your little pigeonhole. But it never works that way. Obviously.
Where does the term central planning come from? Is that USSR or is that FDR?
Both. I don't know who was first. I mean, I don't know. I would think it might even go back to Marx. I know one of the planks of Marxist thought was having a central bank, which is the essence of central economic planning.
You know what I love about Casper? There are no streets or buildings named after FDR here.
Really? That's good.
There are, like, most places I've lived.
The unfortunate,
you know, it's a common
thing, though, is there's a plethora of buildings named after Dick Cheney.
There's the Dick Cheney Federal Building, which is where the local FBI offices are, which is right next door to and almost touching, like, 3 inches away from the William Jefferson Clinton Memorial Post Office, which is also the building that has the welfare office or the SSI office in it, which makes sense. And, you know, partisan people who believe in the left-right paradigm would probably think those buildings fight with each other at night when no one's looking. But I think they actually, like, have a drink and go get a hooker and smoke a cigar together.
I think they spoon together and whisper sweet nothings into each
other's
ears. They
spoon in the night.
There's also the football stadium is also named after Dick Cheney, the high school football stadium.
Well, Dick Cheney did live here. Dick Cheney's childhood home is about 8 blocks from my house.
Yeah, and he went to that high school. He went to Natrona County High School, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there's no plaque on it. It's just the yellow house down on whatever street that is, Sunoco or whatever. There's all these streets named after oil companies here, too. Yeah. So I thought of some more personification of the United States government, Smokey the Bear.
Smokey the Bear, right. Telling you what to do with your matches.
The bear that's going to eat you if you don't put out your campfire.
See, Smokey the Bear is nice and cuddly and fuzzy and all that. And, you know, a lot of people, when they think of the government and the good things it does, they think of national parks. Do you want to address that whole bee's nest?
Oh, just and drill for oil in Teddy Roosevelt's head in up in South Dakota.
I don't think Yellowstone would go to if it weren't run by the government. And as it stands now, it's private companies that do everything in Yellowstone that are contracted through the government.
I'm going to quote Ron Swanson on this. I think it should be privatized and run like a Stuckey's restaurant.
The other thing is, there's lots of precedents for preserves and nature preserves that are done voluntarily. You know, groups that buy large tracts of land because it's so beautiful and they take care of it as a preserve and they don't need any government violence to do it.
And in the city, you have neighborhood gardens, too. I mean, yeah, there's a good model for all
neighborhood
that.
Neighborhood gardens, community gardens. And Yellowstone is so beautiful that I think it's market value for its beauty is worth more than any other market value you could extract from that land.
Well, one of the theories I've heard of, if we decentralized and didn't have a central bank and went back to a gold standard, one theory I've heard is that there's not enough gold right now to cover the wealth in America. But I think what they could do is have all the money backed by something. And one of the things it could be backed by is deeds to privatized federal land. I mean, the federal government, west of Nebraska, the federal government owns like 40% of all the land. I mean, Wyoming, I think it's near or above 50%. And they could just, you know, divide it up into 160-acre plots and make each one equal a certain bill and use that for money.
Well, the thing is, I think it's a fallacy to say that there's not enough gold to cover all the wealth. Because then the value of gold just changes. More. Yeah, that's what deflation is. Then the value of the money just changes.
It'd be worth $1,000 a gram.
Right. It changes to account for that. I mean, the point is there's a finite supply, so its price goes up or down based on how much wealth there is. Obviously, wealth can be created infinitely.
You could have a tritium-backed economy. Do you know what tritium is?
I'm guessing it's another precious metal or rare metal.
It's about 1,000 times more valuable than uranium, which is more valuable than gold. Tritium is what they use a vapor of in the sights that I have on my Glock, the little green glowing
dark ones.
That's
where I've heard it before. Okay. Night sights.
And it's produced by like running hydrogen 3 through a cyclotron or something. And the total amount produced in America each year is like a pound and a half. You don't need much to make the tritium sights.
Okay.
And it's infinitely more valuable, but it's also highly carcinogenic. You wouldn't really want to use it for money.
Right. Well, there's lots of reasons why gold is money. And I think Aristotle or one of those old Greek philosophers laid out 5 reasons. And it really is objectively one unmatched in a lot of its things. I mean, not only does it have its own intrinsic value, but it's infinitely divisible. You know, it can be cut up into tiny little pieces. Diamonds are valuable and rare, but
the criteria of what makes a good commodity is, you know, infinitely divisible, portable, recognizable. There might be one or two other criteria. Do you know them?
It has valuable. To have intrinsic value. Not just value because says so, but gold can actually be used.
Gold and
things.
Silver meet all that. Right. Paper bills don't.
Right, right.
They meet 3 out of 4 of them. They're divisible, they're portable, everything but valuable.
Well, they don't have any intrinsic value. And a good example, I forget who said it. It might have been either Lou Rockwell or Tom Woods, but they said, if you were a pirate and you were on a desert island and you came across two treasure chests, and one of them had, you know, $1 million in $100 bills from, you know, some defunct government, like the Spanish government or something, from 1500, and you found a chest full of gold, which one would you take back on the ship? You wouldn't take the paper bills. Nobody would. What are you going to do with paper from a government that doesn't exist anymore?
Well, some of it's worth money to collectors, but not much. I mean, it depends. Like a good U.S. Confederate note can be worth $1,000, but a good, what's the German Empire that devalued heavily?
Weimar?
Yeah, a good Weimar Republic bill is worth pennies.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, people get them and give them as gifts, as jokes. Here's 1,000,000 marks. You know,
right, right.
Buy a loaf of bread.
Maybe one of the other criteria was not easily reproduced.
Not easily faked or created.
Right. In fact, there was an episode of DuckTales, if you remember DuckTales, with Scrooge McDuck, where the inventor-scientist guy invents this duplicator ray. And so the three nephews or whatever, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, they take it and start duplicating Scrooge McDuck's gold. And then, you know, he tells them not to do it, and they do it, and it ends up being gold inflation. Everybody's coming around with wheelbarrows full of gold coins and paying for everything. And so,
that's funny.
Nice, good lesson for the kids back then. I don't know if kids will get anything.
I mean,
like
really, that
days.
Duplicator machine exists, but not for gold, but for information. You know, a personal computer, you can infinitely duplicate digital media now.
That's true. Have you seen the 3D printers now? So you can actually, those are amazing as well.
I mean, they're not to the point where they can make a gun cheaply yet, but they're to the point where they can make, you know, a simple model of a motor.
Yeah. Well, I've seen them make, you know, like not an Allen wrench, but like a monkey wrench or an adjustable tool, things like that.
Yeah, something without a lot of moving parts that's really simple, but they're still really expensive, but that'll come down.
Yeah, exactly.
So the West Memphis Three.
Yeah, I saw the note on this. It sounds familiar. Who were the West Memphis Three?
They were three kids arrested in the 90s for allegedly murdering and raping. They were like teenagers who were arrested for allegedly murdering and raping a couple of 7 or 8 year old boys. And all of the evidence points at they did not do it. And it was basically just West Memphis, Arkansas, the whole community and the whole state were up in arms and in fear to the point where they had to throw somebody in jail. Mm. And this is pre-DNA. And they were all put away on the testimony of one of the three kids who was coerced, who was mildly retarded. I mean, he was, you know, a high-functioning retarded kid, was coerced into giving a really contradictory to the evidence statement that him and these two other kids did it. And it's like, you know, he said they cut him up with knives, and experts said that the cuts on the kids were from animals after the fact. Mm. And they completely disregarded the fact that some black guy was seen that no one had ever seen in some restaurant that day, covered in mud and blood, like washing up in the bathroom, and like took a shit on the floor in the women's bathroom and then left before the police got there. And the leader of these three kids, or the one that really stands out the most, was basically like the one kind of goth, death rock, metalhead kid in town. And, you know, who'd been in a little bit of mild trouble with the law, but they were like, oh, someone said he did it. He must have done it. He has black hair and listens to satanic music and reads Stephen King novels. Mm. Recently, they were set free. I mean, a lot of people really rooted for this. Like Henry Rollins and Pearl Jam had benefit albums and concerts and tried to raise money and awareness for legal defense in another trial.
Were they set free from an appeal? Did they win an appeal?
It was a really weird thing. It was basically they had another trial. It was a closed trial or like a hearing with a judge. And they were basically told, if you plead somewhere between no contest and guilty, it was like this weird plea that's rarely used. But they are still convicted felons, can't vote, can't have guns, etc., and can't sue. If you plead to this sort of guilty, sort of not guilty, sort of no contest, we will let you out of prison. And they did.
Huh.
And so they kind of got screwed, but they got out, which is good. The thing that is really noteworthy for me and really sad is a lot of the comments on blogs and CNN and things like that. Like, half the people are rightfully saying, you know, great, great that these people got out. It was a miscarriage of justice. And half of them are saying they should be thrown away and electrocuted and throw away the key and blah, blah, blah. That just that status bullshit,
yep,
you know,
yep.
Like everyone wants to fucking turn the government guns on somebody and thinks that they have a moral right to do that when there was no reason. I mean, we said the same thing about the Casey Anthony thing. I believe Casey Anthony probably maybe did do something to her kid, or at best was a really negligent parent and didn't report a disappearance of a kid to anybody, which is wonky. But I really believe that the West Memphis 3, that these kids did not do it.
Yeah. You know? Well, the lynch mob has been replaced by the court system, and people cry for blood.
And the internet and mob. The internet lynch mob.
Well, that's why the internet lynch mob gets upset when the court system doesn't lock somebody up and throw away
lynch.
The key. When they don't lynch, when they don't do their job that these statist people think they should do. And I see it all the time. I mean, almost any time there's a crime story, a news crime story, there's always at least two or three people in the comments that say, you know, oh, all these gangbangers should be sent on an island and nuked, or we should lock them all up and throw away the key, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just the premise that if a cop accused somebody of something, it must be true. They must be guilty, because otherwise, why would the nice police officer man throw him in jail?
Yeah, that just goes hand in hand with the decline of everything. You know, you ever heard that term, that saying? I don't know who said it, and it's been misattributed to a couple people, and it's probably a combination of two things two different people said, but it's a quote, something like, democracies are the best form of government, but they tend to degenerate into socialism in between 150 and 250 years historically, because people realize that they can vote for free money.
Right, they can vote for other people's money. Yeah, they can vote themselves.
You know, look at Britain.
The theft.
Look at Britain with all the kids hopped up on socialism and Jankum torching buildings.
Jankum. That needs to be in our podcast glossary.
Jankum. Yep. I was reading this article about the riots in England, which I guess have subsided because they've declared martial law and there's a cop on every corner. But there's a building there, a furniture building that is a very famous, very beautiful building. And there's a famous picture from these riots of that building just burnt to a crisp. And the running irony of it was that building survived World War I and World War II and didn't survive these riots.
Wow. And I remember hearing the rioters saying, this is to get our taxes back or something, from people who had never worked to get those taxes taken out in the first place.
Yeah. I'm going to the doctor this week. They have this thing. Now, this is something that'll piss off some of our listeners, but I'll put it out there. I don't have health insurance because I can't afford it. My wife has it, but I don't have it. Casper, Wyoming has a city-run thing where you can go in and get a blood test. They probably drug test you too, or a syphilis test you, because they're all concerned about that. But they have this thing where for $25 you could go in and get a complete blood panel, which tells you, like, you know, if you have cancer or if you have diabetes or anything like that, which at a doctor would be, you know,
thousands of dollars,
20 times that much. And I'm gonna go do it just because I haven't been to a doctor in like 3 years, and I feel justified in doing that because of the 1 cent voluntary, so-called voluntary tax in Wyoming pays for it. So it's like I've already paid for it by working and spending
money. You know, I'm under the impression, and I'm under the feeling now, that it's okay to take advantage of government programs. I don't agree with them. I don't think they should exist. But the whole system is screwed up. I mean, if you take the position that you have to avoid anything the government provides, you can't drive on roads, I'm going to have to rescind my education, my university degree. And I don't think the system should be the way it is. But, you know, they steal from me.
Well,
in a
free market, I would be able to have health insurance because there'd be competition for health insurance across state lines.
Yeah.
And it'd be cheaper the way they have with auto insurance.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in a free market, we wouldn't have all these problems. I think there'd be a lot more wealth. You would probably be able to afford insurance. And if you weren't, you would probably be able to go to a doctor for an affordable price. I mean, before the government was involved in healthcare, it didn't cost an arm and a leg to go to the doctor. It wasn't a break the bank kind of thing. And now it is. Education is the same way. I mean, before it was so heavily subsidized, and basically the education system now is you become an indentured servant, so you can get a piece of paper saying that you went to university. I mean, I'm going to be paying student loans for the rest of my life.
Or sold into sex slavery. Nima's debt.
Right. And so I don't think it's unfair to take advantage of the system. I think we should still fight to bring down the system. I'm not going to say, oh, I use roads, so I think that the government should always use violence to build roads.
Well, we've talked about how that's the rote argument that statists use against libertarians of, well, if you're really libertarian, you shouldn't drive on the roads. And it's like, in their idea of what you'd have to do to be a pure libertarian, you'd literally have to go live in a Unabomber-style shack and hunt your own food and dig your own well. And even so, the way that regulations are getting now, some agent would show up on your cabin doorstep and tell you you have to do it differently.
Right. Well, it's like if back in the slave days, somebody said, well, if you don't want to be a slave, you should just not work very hard. Well, then you get whipped. You get whipped.
Yeah.
Or you don't get food.
Or if you don't like slavery, you move to Canada. A lot of them did. You know, did I ever tell you that the house I grew up in upstate New York had a barn? Well, it was like a garage, but it was originally a barn. I mean, the garage on this house was bigger than most houses. It was two stories and could park like 8 cars in it. And it had a place where the boards were cut out in the floor where they used to hide slaves on the Underground Railroad.
Nice. That's awesome.
That was my fort.
Yeah, I bet. I bet you could have lots of fun imagination.
Lots of fun down in a dirt hole when you were a kid. Yeah, you could hide dead cats down there and then wait and see if the angels take them.
Yeah. Those are the days before text messaging.
Yeah. Yeah, now whoever's living in that house, their kid is probably down there hiding with an iPad. Yeah. So, Wyoming cops took their first forced blood draw last week.
Ah, was it to test for spice?
No, it was a guy they thought was drunk driving. He refused a breathalyzer, and under state law now, the cops all have iPads, which we're paying for. They have iPads in their police cars so they can email a judge, and the judges now all have government iPads. Ugh. So they can get a warrant wirelessly. And this is my bigger problem with the thing than the problem of they had 5 cops hold a guy down and take him to a medical center and have a nurse draw blood. The bigger problem for me is the door this opens, the wireless warrant stuff of, like, you know, generally to get a warrant, you have to go to a judge and explain them to him, not just send him an email and say, hey, some guy's probably drunk.
Right.
You know, click here to approve warrant.
Yeah. Although it's not like judges ever I mean, judges are just a rubber stamp in that situation anyway, as it is.
Sometimes. Sometimes not.
Sometimes not. I don't know.
Not on Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Well, there you go, watching the mainstream media again.
I have a new name for that now. Whenever it comes on, you know, at the beginning it says, the stories you're about to hear are true, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I've started, for some reason, parroting four of the words in it, and I go like, heinous, unit, victims, squad. And so that's now, like, I kind of chirp along with that because it's at the beginning of every episode and I say it.
Yeah.
But now that's my name for that show. I call that show Heinous Unit Victim Squad. Like, hey, DJ, you want to watch some Heinous Unit Victim Squad? It kind of sums the show up, too.
Yeah, pretty much. Although, I don't know, I maybe have seen half an episode in my lifetime.
It's good TV, man, even though it's status and it's cops. I'm reverting to my old, I'm liking cop shows and just sort through what's legitimate and what's not in them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as long as you watch anything with the proper amount of knowledge, it's not going to brainwash you.
And generally, you know, they're not busting people for dime bags. They're the murder police. They're going after murderers and rapes and torture. Right. And you know.
I guess the problem is, and then people, they think that that's what all cops do.
Yeah, and then they want to trust all cops because Stabler and Olivia are nice people and fighting a good fight.
Right.
Helping actual victims. So somebody asked me, we'll close up with this. One of our listeners sent me an email and asked, in LibPair, how would you deal with drunk driving, period? And how would you deal with drunk driving if somebody kills somebody? And I would say if somebody kills somebody, I would have less stress on throwing them in a cage and more stress on they need to come up with a whole lot of fucking money for the family. Mm-hmm. And it's weird putting a money value on people, but it's like, you need to get something if somebody kills your loved one, I think, from the person who killed them.
Yeah.
You know, and in the old days, like, the term blood money now means money that's ill-gotten. It didn't used to mean that. Blood money used to be if you killed somebody, you know, somebody's son, you had to pay the father, or if you killed somebody's husband, you had to pay the wife blood money, like blood geld, to make some kind of amends. And it sounds kind of like a half measure, but it's like, I think what they have right now is no measure. I think when someone kills somebody and the state decides that they own everyone's body and they put someone in a cage and then the family of the victim or the loved one of the victims get nothing.
Not only that, but the family of the victim has to pay taxes to feed the guy that killed the victim.
Yeah.
They end up feeding that guy.
I think the guy should just have to go be their... I think the guy should just have to go be their slave for many years.
I wouldn't argue with that. There should be some deal where the main point here is that the murderer, the drunk driver who killed the person, they should be beholden to the family. They didn't commit a crime against society. You'll notice that legal cases are a crime against the state. It's the state versus so-and-so.
Right.
It's a crime against society, a collective.
And, you know, sometimes there's a civil lawsuit afterwards, but not always, and sometimes they're not allowed to, or... sometimes they don't have the money to do it, or there's not a clear enough case for a lawyer to take the case. But when somebody loses a loved one, I wouldn't look at that as like, oh, a bunch of money, I'm rich kind of thing. I look at it as like, it's helpful to deal with the expenses, you know, burying somebody or traveling to a funeral or paying their bills or paying your bills. Or I'll give a perfect example. When my daughter died, she wasn't murdered. She died of leukemia, and it was a long time coming, which I don't know if that's better or worse, but it's, you can prepare for it more. But when she actually died, everyone I knew and people I hadn't talked to in 10 or 20 years were writing me and calling me and saying, I'm really sorry. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help. Everybody said, let me know if there's anything I can do to help. And a lot of people said things that were, I thought were inappropriate. Like, you know, she's in Jesus's hands now, or it was God's will or some bullshit, which, you know, her death was partially what led me to being a deist. Mm-hmm. But, and then a lot of people just like burned me out by calling me. It was more like they were doing it to make them feel good instead of me. And of everybody who said, you know, is there anything I can do to help? There were a few people I said, yeah, you can. Can I borrow some money to travel to her memorial? I didn't have the money. And several people were taken aback by that. They were like, well, why are you asking for money? You know, I said I'd do anything for you, but don't ask me for money. And this one friend of mine was like, I don't have any money, but I can give you some frequent flyer miles and get you there.
That works, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And this other friend was like, I can give you $500. You don't have to pay me back. And it was like, it was good because for a while after that, I was too distraught to work.
Yeah.
You know, and it helped tide me through.
I think we also got to really answer this guy's questions about what you would do with drunk driving and LibPair.
I think we've answered it of if somebody's killed.
If somebody's killed.
I don't know what the exact ramifications would be, but it would be less about punishing the person and more about making them make amends to the close family or loved ones of that person.
Because that's what's really important. Also because, I mean, it would really depend on how much of a factor the alcohol was in the death. And to me, the real crime is the death. It's the vehicular homicide. I think you have to separate those things. I mean, because, okay, you could also say, you know, it's almost the hate crime argument. You know, it doesn't matter if why you killed somebody. The fact is you killed somebody. You shouldn't get off on it or get extra punishment because you felt a certain way when you did kill them. The fact is that you took a life. And I think the DUI thing as well, if you didn't kill anybody, just DUI in general, when we've talked about this before, it's pre-crime. In LibPair, I think you would have competing road systems. You might have a road system where they're very...
You'd have the drunk road and you'd have the sober road.
Exactly. And then you would have to deal with whatever company or organization or voluntary group ran the road that you were drunk driving on. If you broke the rule and drove drunk and got caught, you might be banned from that road. You might be not allowed to use that road anymore and you can only drive on the drunk roads. Yeah.
And the private police that police that road for that corporation wouldn't be concerned with just generating income and throwing you in a cage. And if there were ones that were like that, people wouldn't use them. In the competition in the market, they'd go to the other roads.
Right. Well,
you know, the police would actually be concerned with your safety. They'd pull over and help you when your car's disabled. Right. If you're going too fast, they might pull you over and say, you know, we have scientifically determined that this stretch of this road in this weather, this time of year, you're going a little fast. We'd like to see you healthy and other people healthy. Please go a little slower.
They'd be like security guards at an amusement park or at Disneyland. Do you ever see them?
Yeah.
No, because they're not intrusive, because people wouldn't pay $50 to go to Disneyland if there were, you know, private cops everywhere harassing people.
So basically you're saying that in LibPair, everything including the highways would be run by toothless carnies?
I said Disneyland. Have you ever been? There's no toothless carnies there.
Nah, DJ's been to Disneyland a lot, and I know it's a well-run thing.
It really is. And about the roads, you know, I think people should have a choice. People should have a freedom. I think it's safe for me to drive 100 in speeds excess of 100. I've done it my whole life. I've never been in a wreck. I don't see why that right should be taken away from me. And, you know, okay, well, I have the right to drive on a road where people don't speed. Okay, yeah, you do. So why can't you have that choice as well? Why does it have to be a one-size-fits-all situation that's enforced by a monopoly of violence, is my point.
Okay, so the name of this cast is going to be Why Disney Should Replace the Government.
I wouldn't go that far.
Why Disneyland Should Run the Government.
Disney shouldn't run the government. There should be no government.
I know, but it's Why Disneyland Should Replace the Government. It's a good term. We don't agree with it. But it's a step in the right direction.
It is.
And I think that's a good time to cut this file. It's getting long. And please go on iTunes and comment and rate the podcast and tell two friends and buy our t-shirts if you want to help support us. And we still have that open offer for every $50 in donations we get. We'll do an extra cast, 2 in 1 week.
There you go. Is it up to 2 in 1 week? Are we going to, what if we...
No, we're doing 1 in 1 week. We're on our 26th episode.
No, I mean if somebody donated if we got $300 in donations, are we going to do a podcast every day or something?
Well, we'd probably spread it out over a few weeks, but yeah, we do 2 a week for a while.
Fair enough.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
Worms.
Peace. Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.